Hello and welcome to Constellations, a playbook for improving performance. I'm the author, John Janclays, and I'm here to walk you through how to create your very own playbook to improve your performance. You've probably come to my website and downloaded two items, this audio portion, and also an Excel workbook. In that Excel workbook, you're going to find that there are five tabs. We're going to go through each one and talk about how to complete that. This exercise could take anywhere from an hour if you have a lot of this information already at your fingertips, or it could take 6 to 7, maybe even 8 hours to complete. What's important, and I want to acknowledge, is that you're probably only 10% of the population that would actually take the time to write down their goals and objectives, to write down a plan for learning, to talk about what your personal development needs are going to be and the partnerships that are going to be key to accomplishing your goals. And I'm describing the five tabs in the workbook that we're going to turn to and complete. But having those written down and you sharing them with someone else on a regular basis about your progress to achieving them already puts you in the top 10%. So I just want to tell you, congratulations for downloading these files and beginning your journey to better performance. Before we begin, though, just a little bit about the title, Constellations, a Playbook for Improving Performance. I was inspired by looking up in the heavens at the infinite amount of possibilities that are up there. When you look up there, you see stars and you see shooting stars and galaxies and all those great things that we can imagine as we look up towards the heavens. And so it's been true through history that others have looked up there and put together in novel ways the stars and the constellations into different symbols like the zodiac and others that you can think of. And so I think about we look out in today's business landscape, infinite possibilities coming at us with great velocity and speed. And it's the way that you choose, select, and put together in novel ways these principles inside of a constellation that will help you achieve the goals and the things that are important to you. I've come to learn through time, too, that by having written down your goals and objectives and your plans about how you're going to achieve them, in times where there seems to be just a dizzying amount of disruption, that if you have these, that you're able to recalculate your approach towards your goals, almost as if you had a GPS system, by knowing your starting point and where you want to end up, that when new information, some of these are opportunities, some of them are challenges, but that you can factor those into your plan and recalculate your path towards your goals by having them predetermined up front of what you're trying to accomplish. This is one of the principles of having your goals written down and your approaches to obtaining them. Let's talk about then, what are the five tabs that are going to be in the workbook? So let's go over them one by one, and then we will begin with one, have an in-depth conversation before moving on to two, and then a conclusion, and we'll put this all together. But the first tab is called Goals and Objectives, Measures, Projects, and Talent Development. This is tab number one in the playbook. This is the foundation for everything else that we're going to do. These are your statements about what matters to you and what you are trying to accomplish, and you're stating these in very specific terms so you can begin to devise plans to get to your objectives or to accomplish your goals. Tab number two builds on the first one, goals and objectives. The second tab is called personal development, today and tomorrow. What we're doing in this section is contemplating who do I need to become in order to accomplish my goals and objectives? Or if you're a leader, who do we need to become in order to accomplish our goals and objectives? And we want to think about this as today, but also tomorrow. Some of the things we need to be learning today to be prepared for tomorrow need to start today. So we need to know the difference between just-in-time information and information that we are learning in order to develop ourselves to be ready for the future, for the next horizon of work that's coming at us. Tab number three builds on the second tab, the personal development plan, by saying, let's articulate with even more specificity not only what we need to learn, but how we're going to learn it. What is our strategies? Tab number three is called Learning Through Research, Reading, Podcast, Videos, and my favorite, field interviews. So we'll go into an in-depth conversation around these ideas. Tab number 4 is called a partnering mindset, going farther together. So many of the things that we want to accomplish, as we will articulate in our goals and objectives, require help from others. This is an interdependent world in order to get great things done. And so in this section, we're going to talk about what are the key relationships that will help determine whether or not you achieve your goals and objectives, and then begins to outline and describe how you're going to maintain these robust relationships in order to thrive and get your results done. The final section in the playbook is called time management. It talks about meetings, something that I call cave time. There's administrative work and time for learning that's in there. So when you think about time management, and the reason why it's the last and the fifth tab in this first playbook is until we talk about what it is we want to do through our goals and objectives, our personal development, our approaches to learning, the relationships that we need to imagine and leverage in order to reach our goals, that we then can say, let's now allocate time to all those activities and do some reality testing if we have those front-loaded correctly in order to move through time to achieve our goals. And as you listen to this audio, maybe the first time through, why don't you print out a copy of each one of the blank templates and then take notes on top of that as we go through each section? Then, when you start to complete your own workbook, you'll be able to incorporate those thoughts and ideas that you've captured by listening to the audio. So if you're ready, well, let's get started. Okay, so let's take a look at tab number 1. This is called Goals and Objectives. If you're in the Excel workbook, you'll notice that there are two tabs, 1A and 1B. 1A is an exemplar. It is goals that are already filled out to give you an idea how you might state goals and objectives for an executive. B is a template, and it has no content that is filled in other than the framework or the structure. And let's go ahead and start there, and I'll walk you through an orientation to goals and objectives. Goals and objectives are a list of things, a short list, a curated list of leveraged things that if we focus on, our mission will come true, our department goals will be achieved, or heck, even our personal outcomes that we want for ourselves. You know, it's very interesting. There was a study on accountability done from the American Society of Training and Development, and they calculated these statistics on the probability of completing a goal in the following way. If you have an idea for a goal, you got a 10% chance of completing your mission. If you consciously decide that you will do it, you've increased the odds to 25%. If you decide when you'll do it so that it's time-bound, you increase up to 50%. If you plan how you will do it, you're still at 50%, but getting closer. When you commit to someone else that you do it, it's now up to 65%. And if you have a specific accountability appointment with a person that you've committed to on a regular basis to review your progress towards your goals, moves all the way up to 95%. By writing down our goals and objectives, we are actually increasing the odds that we'll actually achieve what we've set out to do. For me, goals and objectives have three broad categories, no matter if you're doing this for the full enterprise, your department, or for yourself personally. And that is, there's generally a half dozen things that you need to make sure that get done in order just to stay on your current path, your current trajectory towards your goals. The second idea is that you probably have some ideas of how to accelerate your path towards those goals. Many times those are changing out the way that you do the current state. And those are a lot of times articulated as projects or initiatives. And we're going to talk a little bit about that and how to record goals on it. And the next one is talent. It takes your personal talent, your team's talent, in order to be able to get the goals done. Be thinking about what do we need to know, who do we need to become, particularly in the context when we're changing and accelerating towards a better outcome. Therefore, people need to learn, to grow, and to get better too. So these are the three main categories again: measures, what we need to do to sustain the mission right now; projects, what are we going to do to actually improve how we do the current state, and then finally, talent. So let's begin with establishing measures. At the back of the book, Constellations, there is a suggested reading list. There are several books there that talk specifically about measures and how to establish them, talking about concepts of leading and lagging indicators, and go a little bit more in depth than we can just do in this audio. But one of the books, for example, is The Balanced Scorecard. So I would recommend that if you're getting stuck on any portion of putting together your first set of measures, that maybe you check in with those readings would be a helpful step. The best case is that if you could pick 6 to 8 measures that really describe, 80 or 90% of what actually has to be done for your mission to happen or for you to meet your department goals, that would be ideal. Many times you take a look at a leader's goals and objectives, the measure section could have as many as 12, 14, heck, I've seen folks have as many as 25 different kinds of measures. And when I look at that, I'm sure it's useful, but I'm wondering about how can you focus on the activities to get a half dozen things done rather than 12 to 24? So your focus is kind of diffuse. So one of the important things in effective goals and objectives, starting with measures, is picking those half dozen things, maybe 6 to 8, that are really describe what you really need to show up with. The old 80-20 principle kind of comes to mind. So where do we look for those, that 80-20 rule, to leverage and create some good measures? One of my favorite places to go to right away is the income statement for your business. And if you have an income statement, if you're a profit center for your department, that's great too. And what I like to do is get it at a pretty granular level, not a consolidated financial statement, and actually look at those and stack rank, for example, income items, maybe the first 10, and begin to look at which way they're trending. So maybe I would take the income statement, a little more granularity, look at it over 4 or 5 periods. This could be quarterly or monthly, and begin to understand what kind of volatility there is in each one of those more granular views of income and or expenses. And then appreciate where is the 80-20 rule in the income statement, either with expenses or revenue. And once I find those, that's what I key in on, is saying, if those are my endpoints and this is the 80-20 principle at play, I generally find that you can narrow the measures that are going to make the biggest impact down to about 4 or 5. Once I've established measures that are my endpoint, the 80-20 principle, the next thing I do is I step back and I look at those and say, what are the key activities that drive those results? So let's go after an example here. Let's say you're looking at the income statement and you're looking at revenue. If we're talking about a bank or a credit union, probably 60 to 70% comes from lending operations. And so we call that interest income that we're creating as a line item on the income statement from lending operations. This is the interest earned on loans as an example. The next step is to think about what are the leveraged activities that actually get the result that we need. So for example, maybe it's how many applications are submitted by customers or by members for credit unions, and to appreciate of those applications, how many of those actually turn into loans. That's a very leveraged activity that ends up getting the results. So making this relationship or understanding the causation of activities that yield results is real important to achieving the endpoint of the results that you're looking for. So every business kind of has this relationship. And if you can look at that, it's very helpful in setting up your goals to understanding what is a leading indicator or an input in order to get the lagging indicator or the output that you want as a result. Now that we've kind of scoured the income and expense statement for opportunities to describe what do we need to do to sustain the mission, another good area to look is from the customer's perspective or a member's perspective. So this is commonly known as member satisfaction or customer satisfaction rates or net promoter scores. There's a great discussion in books that are in the suggested reading at the end of Constellations about these topics as well. And It begins to give you kind of a 360 view of your performance. If I know what I'm doing with revenue and expenses and the key activities that drive those, then the folks who are engaged in that process, my customers or members, getting their feedback about how that is going is real important to understanding, hey, are folks really liking what I'm doing and what I'm providing as far as a member journey or an experience? Or actually, there's some weakness there, and I'm beginning to get feedback about those activities that drive the results from the member's perspective is not going very well. And that's really actionable data for you to move on. And I guess that's the most important thing when we're talking about measures, is that the information, certainly, it's a guidepost to how you're heading towards your North Star or place to check in with. But it also should be telling you, where can I take additional actions in order to get the outcomes that I want? So I know this is a bit focused, this discussion on retail banking or credit union activities, but these can apply to any business. We all have customers that we rely on in order to drive the revenue or the outcomes of our income expense statement. And having that as one of our lenses of performance or one of the ways that we check in on how the current mission is going is key. So now that you've gone through a list of possible measures, you've thought about leading and lagging indicators, it's time to do some thought about how often will you check in on these measures to look at them. So typically, your outputs are looked at monthly because that's generally when the income and expense statement summary is ready for your review. But on the activity side, the inputs, the leading indicators, this is something that I think is a real opportunity to think about and talk about with your team and or to think about for yourself. Here's the way I think about it. There's 365 days in the year. There's generally 251 business days. There's a monthly look, a quarterly look, and then an annual look. And think about that if you were trying to make your way to the North Star and you were starting to get off track, how soon would you want to know that you need to do a course correction on the leading activities? You'd probably want to know as soon as possible so that the correction would be a more subtle one or one that you could, you know, adapt to quickly. Or maybe the two or three things you're going to try to get back on track, the first two don't work, and you'd sure like to get to the third, the right answer, to get back on track. So seeing something early on the leading indicator side is something to be thought about. For example, back to thinking about loan applications as an input for the output that we want on revenue for the income statement, having a check on how many applications daily are being submitted would let me know if I have enough input to get the output I want. So every business has this kind of correlation. So the key thing here is on your leading indicators, on activities, think about how often you want to get that information. I would suggest daily would be a really good approach. Another good process check that I like to do now that I've got my 6 to 8 key measures is review them and asking myself, are these SMART goals? SMART is an acronym, and it stands for specific. Can you define what it is you want to accomplish? Is it measurable? Can you easily and accurately assess your progress? Attainable, are you setting yourself up for success? Is it doable? Does it have the right tension on it? Is it relevant? That if I do these things, will it make a positive difference in getting me to where I ultimately want to go? And are they time bound? The last letter in the acronym, SMART. Can you tell me when you must arrive at certain points in order to achieve your goal? So using the SMART acronym is a good process check now that you've got your 6 to 8 key measures. So I'm stepping back and I'm taking a look at my goals, and I can see that they're time bound, and I've got it down to a half dozen or so measures that I have both leading and lagging indicators. I like to do one more process check before I'm done with this section. And that's to project myself into the future. And let's say I'm sitting down with my leader and I'm giving an update on how I'm doing against my goals and objectives. I want to be able to say at any time, am I able just to say, where am I at against my goals with the intervals that are important to me? We said some of these daily, and we said some of these could be monthly. The next thing is, will I have the data to be able to explain to my leader why I am where I am at against my goals and objectives, right? So having the leading and lagging indicators will help with that. But it's a real important step to understand what are the drivers in order to get to these half dozen results. So that process check is, can I tell where I'm at to goal? Am I able to explain to folks whether I'm falling behind or moving ahead why I am where I am, to know that I have the right data sets in front of me to describe how I'm doing against the mission? And do I already have kind of a, some people call this a pre-mortem, the ideas about my likely pivots that I'll have to make in order to accelerate my path, even get further ahead of schedule where there's opportunities to do that and go over goal? Or can I explain what are the key leverage activities that I'll need to do to get back on track? And if I kind of do that scenario in my head, either reporting where I'm under goal, over goal on any one of these measures, it really helps me think about how I will tell the story about how I'm doing on the mission. Okay, so you have 6 to 8 measures now, leading and lagging indicators. Let's now go to the template 1B, the one that's empty. And I want to walk you through how to actually take those inputs that you've created, your measures, and put them into the Excel spreadsheet. So you'll notice the top section, you know, is listed as key measures. And you'll notice on the left-hand column too, it says department level or enterprise level. This may or may not apply to you, but is not uncommon for executives to have your department goal or your divisional goal, but yet you still have responsibility for a portion of the enterprise level goal. So it's just making that notation there, saying go through that thought process. If you're a leader and you just have a department and you might not have accountability for enterprise level goals, then that may not be relevant for you. But we did want to make sure that there was some way to capture those that are kind of more of a superior or a higher weighting in value compared to maybe just department goals. So that's what we're acknowledging there. So as we're getting ready to put actual measures into the template, maybe this is a good time to switch over to tab 1A on goals and objectives, because this is an exemplar and it shows you what the data would actually look like once it's put in here. Let's kind of step back and just kind of take in what we're showing here on goals and objectives. There's several things here. So certainly, as we talked about, enterprise level and department level goals, we're showing 4 here and describing them as return on assets, capital, net revenue, and OPEX. Notice across the top, it says not only do we know what the target is, written smartly, that by year end, that our target for return on assets is 1%, capital 11%, net revenue 750,000, and OPEX 500,000. As you look across what is on target, you'll notice that there's also an idea saying if we get going and we fall short of being on target, we describe that as threshold as being 90 or 99% of goal or falling behind at 90% or less. And then on the other side of the performance continuum is above target, anything that's 105% over target. I think it's a great conversation to have with your leader or just with yourself and saying, you know, let's put some tension against the goal that we've stated smartly in terms of describing what good looks like and what threshold performance looks like, so that when you're updating to yourself or to any of your stakeholders, there's a real quick calibration point that is done before the mission even gets started about when we need to have good conversation about, you know what, we're giving high fives because we're above target, or what does sub-performance look like, either as just below target or something that really requires everyone's attention in order to get going. Because remember, we're describing these 68 measures as the things that make the difference in the mission. These are the most impactful. So we want to know up front and describe what threshold or on target or falling behind performance might look like. For many companies, departments, stopping right there may be sufficient. Otherwise, let's agree up front, what are the half dozen things that we need to do on measures? Let's talk about what approaching goal and being at goal or above goal looks like. And that is enough of a tracking and a value statement. If, however, you'd like to be able to have a summary statement on how you're doing on all your goals and objectives, so your measures, your projects, and your talent development goals, then the rest of the scorecard begins to allow you to approach that. So let's dig into that here for just a minute. So in looking at the template, you'll notice on the right-hand side, you'll see raw score at the very top, you'll see weight, you'll see adjusted score, and then the right of that in black, a total score, which summarizes the performance for this leader in this example. You'll also notice if we take a look at the column that's called weight, that there's numbers going all the way down. So there's 4 10% allocations to measures, 4 10% allocations to projects and initiatives, and then 5%, 4 5% allocations to activities under talent development. So all of those add up to 100, right? So under measures, there's 40%. Under projects and initiatives, another 40%. Now we're up to 80. And the remaining 20% is on talent development. These are arbitrary weightings that I put in here, but it does demonstrate the idea that across your total goals and objectives, there's an amount of weighting up to 100% of your total effort applied to each one of these categories. This really helps with being able to do a summary statement of how you're doing against your goals and objectives. So simply what the scorecard does is within each metric or each accountability, it tells you what the raw score is. So for example, if we look at the top, return on assets, we see the goal is 1 or 100 basis points, and the actual performance at the end of the year was 101 or 101% of goal. So that's on target. That's why it's listed under the green category for a leader to look at and review. It's 100% raw score. 101 is the raw score. And then at a weighting of 10%, the adjusted score for that measure against the total is 10.10. So if we add up all the adjusted scores, what you see in the total score category is 100.75. So I know this is a kind of a high-level statement about how to use weightings, but it can be extremely helpful when you're wanting to give a summary statement on how well are you doing against all your goals and objectives. It allows you to do this. This is also very helpful when you get into incentive programs. Maybe there's some kind of calculation or payout for leaders who can do 100% of their goals and those that go beyond that being rewarded. And there's some way of doing a scorecard that puts a balance into each one of these categories and then rolls it up into a summary statement. I hope that's clear. If you're ready, let's move on to projects now. So projects at the highest level for me are ways of improving how you do business today. How do you change the current state? That you want to be able to improve it in some kind of incremental way, or maybe you want to totally transform the way that you do business. For example, in retail banking or credit unions, one of the ways that we are dramatically transforming the business is by setting up digital delivery of our products and services using mobile and online as an example. Maybe a more incremental project within the company could be, you know, we have policies and procedures and we need to update those on a regular basis. So it's a project that needs to be done. It's not transformational. It's maybe more foundational, or maybe there's incremental improvements there. So just distinguishing them out, projects, you may want to think about them as t-shirt sizes, large, medium, and small, but that is kind of the category of projects. It's changing the way that we do business and in some way, either incremental or transformational. On page 21 of the monograph or book is an initiative template. You could substitute that with the word project template. And as we're talking about projects, these changes that we make to the current state, I like to be able to describe them so that we're on the same page about what is the vision for what we're trying to change, either for ourselves internally or for our customers. So if you will, let's kind of go through that together. Looking at page 21 in the text would be where I am right now. If you're with me now, go ahead and starting at the upper left-hand corner, and I'm going to kind of read from top to bottom the different sections to think about when articulating how you're going to get going on a project to change the current state. Who is the champion? Who is responsible at the highest level for making the change happen? What is the purpose of the change? Is the next category kind of the deepest reason for the initiative or the project? Also, to talk about when the project is done, what are the goals? What are we going to see as the changes? And being able to articulate that through, again, using the SMART model, specific, measurable, attainable, realistic, and timely. Also to talk about what are some of the strategies? What are our plans of actions that will help us to achieve the goal? Tactics, which are different than strategies. There are more temporary moving, changing, short-term activities required in order to get our strategies completed, and then being able to talk about outcomes, either quantitatively or qualitatively. When the project is done, what will we be able to measure? What will we be able to view? What are the perceptible changes that we're looking at? And sometimes to describe those, you need both qualitative and quantitative measures to do that. You may be thinking, if I'm doing my goals and objectives, why can't I just write down a project, for example, update a new online system and call that good enough when I'm describing what my goals and objectives are? Just like we did on the measure side, you want to make sure that you're really describing what is the change that you'd like to see happen or what is the point of arrival, so that you know as you're working through the project or as you're making your way towards a goal that you know where you stand. So that's why we're going to take the time on projects to fill out this initiative template or this project template. We've all probably experienced that we've described something that we want to do, that sometimes you arrive at the end of the year and then one person is saying, you know what, we accomplished the project. Another person is saying, what do you mean? That's not at all what I thought the outcomes were going to be from that project. So doing the template helps you get way ahead of that. Describing what good looks for a project can be challenging. And sometimes even filling out this template can be challenging. So why don't we do an example together real quickly so that we really own the difference of these different categories. It's common to confuse goals with strategies and tactics. So let's do an example together. Let's say we have a project called Let's Get John Healthy. It will be the title of the project. The purpose is to make sure that I can do the things I want to do, see the people I want to see, experience life the way I want to its fullest. Reason is why we're doing Let's Get John Healthy project. That's the purpose of it. A goal on the way to that could be articulated as this. John needs to lose 25 pounds by December 31st, 2019. Notice how it follows the SMART format. I could say John just needs to lose weight, but that wouldn't be specific. It wouldn't be measurable and it wouldn't be time bound. So by saying John needs to lose 25 pounds by December 31st, 2019 makes it a SMART goal. Moving on to strategies, what is my plan of action to achieve the goal? So let's say for strategies, I'm going to employ two broad categories. One is exercise, the other is diet. So those could be my two strategies, those two focused areas of activity. The tactics that I'm going to use to support my strategies under the exercise category is I'll do yoga 2 days a week, and then I will ride my Peloton bike 3 days a week. So 5 days of activity broken up into those two tactics. It is not uncommon on projects for tactics to have to change through the duration of the project. So for example, in our project here of John getting healthy, around the exercise tactic, maybe doing yoga 2 days a week and riding the Peloton bike 3 days a week is not creating enough of calorie burn in order to meet my goal of losing 25 pounds by the end of the year. So I may need to change those up. Finally, outcomes. Well, certainly there's a quantitative outcome that we're looking for is losing 25 pounds by the end of the year. But there also may be some qualitative outputs that we'd want to measure at the end of the project. For example, maybe when I look in the mirror, my self-esteem is higher. Maybe my energy is also up. Maybe I can measure that after exercise, I have a more restful sleep, and that restful sleep makes me more energized and creates kind of almost a flywheel effect by using all of these activities. And each of those can be observed and measured. So examples of quantitative and qualitative outcomes from achieving my goal. Well, I hope you find that example helpful in describing how to complete the template. I know it was kind of a silly example of John getting healthy and all of the underlying activities, but it's very common on projects that if we don't do this kind of talk up front, we're not calibrated as a team on what we're really trying to do, what are the outcomes we're really seeing, what are the tactics we're going to use, and how we will know we are successful at the end of the project. So really a key input into establishing good goals and objectives. Okay, so let's go back to the workbook. back to tab 1A. So you finished an initiative template or project template. Now it makes sense when you go and input that project into your scorecard that you have a really good idea of whether or not you're going to be on track, threshold, falling behind, and hopefully maybe moving ahead with the project too, because you have outputs that you can measure to describe how well the project is going because you've done the initiative template up front. Okay, the last section on the goals and objectives is talent development. This is a really, I think, straightforward answer to the question, what do I need to know in order to run the mission today? And who do I need to become in order to run the mission or accelerate the mission tomorrow? And so these are our personal development plans. We have them for both ourselves and the team. And a common component of answering the question of our needs for tomorrow is an idea of succession planning. We know we have needs for if someone is promoted in the organization that somebody else needs to step up. So personal development today and tomorrow for myself and others, the personal development plan, but also a plan for succession for the team and for my role. Much like we did on projects, the initiative template, which is allows us to make a value statement if we're on track or not with a project, the individual or personal development plans are what is going to describe whether we are on target or not with the goals that we're setting for the talent development. So we're going to hold on that and we'll move to the next section of the monograph or the book and the playbook around personal development. And that's tab 2A and 2B in the workbook. Talent. If you want more, become more. And that's something that I think is a real powerful conversation to have with ourselves. But if you're a leader, it is, I think, one of the most important conversations that you have with your staff is to talk about, yep, now that we got your goals and objectives down, we know what you're going to be focusing on. Let's increase the odds that you're going to be able to get those things done by what do you need to learn? If there's any gaps, something you're not sure about, or together we know that this is going to be something new and we're going to need to find a new way to use a new system or a new process, now's the time to have that conversation front-loaded, upfront, a joint effort to talk about what it is we need to learn in the next year or so. Beyond that is also a very powerful conversation of who do you want to become beyond this year? This G&O workbook talks about measures and projects in a 12-year term. But there's real power to be found in the conversation about talking about people's dreams, their aspirations, where they see themselves in the future. And I guarantee you, there's a way to connect that what you are doing today is a foundation and a springboard for where you want to go in the future. And this is a very energizing conversation. And it's a personal commitment of a leader to another saying, I understand you. I see you. The plan that we're writing is going to honor what we need to do today and also what you want to do tomorrow. These are two things that can be dovetailed together and releases incredible power and energy. In the book, Time, Talent, and Energy, written by several Bain consultants, they talk about inspirational leadership. And at the heart of it, it's somebody who's very adept at having this kind of conversation to really listen deeply to what somebody else is dreaming and wanting to do, and then making the connection between the work that we do today with who they want to become tomorrow. So that's also in the recommended reading list in the back of this monograph, and highly recommend reading the book. Very powerful concepts for leaders to own. Okay, let's get right to it. Let's go to the playbook, tab 2A, personal development plan, and let's just get oriented to the form and what is to be completed. So as you can tell, we have the name, we have the role. We're also talking about the desired role in the future beyond 12 months where yourself or someone would like to be. We also want to record here what is our base of education that we have and maybe designations and credentials. I like recording those because oftentimes either one of these could be incomplete and they're in progress. So understanding where we're at with formal education and designation and credentials, many of which require continuing education, is a good input to get. The next thing is the why. Can you have a conversation with yourself and others talking about what is it that actually lights you up in doing your work? Why do you get up and come to work? You know, why, if you want to say, why do you exist? What's your big why that people talk about? Is an important input so that when you complete all the activities, which we're going to record below, do they facilitate your big why at the top of the house? Think about almost like our project template. What is the high level statement of what we're trying to do, and vetting the more granular pieces and tactics back to that big statement. So here again is that big theme, starting with, you know, strategies, goals, tactics. You see this playing out here in a personal development plan as well. The rest of the personal development plan is pretty straightforward. We're just inventorying what are the capabilities that we need to acquire both today and for tomorrow, how we're going to do it, what's our strategy or plan, talking about the individual courses or learning opportunities, the due date when we think it needs to be done. For example, if you need to learn how to do a new process in order to get the goals done that we've articulated for ourselves, it may need to be done in 30 days or by year end. So that's what we're doing, is how are these learning opportunities and capabilities time bound? And then as we're going through the year to make sure that we're keeping up with those commitments and we're on track, you can always report a percentage complete, talk about the total hours devoted to these learning opportunities, and if there's resources that need to be invested in order to get things done. You'll notice, too, that as you go through the roster of the personal development plan, as you can see on the left-hand side, we have 10 opportunities for learning here. You'll notice that some of those have a dark gray border. That indicates learning that you do on your own time, your own dollar, your own resources. I think it's a real important conversation and expectation to set with employees that, hey, a lot of where you want to go in the future or what you want to have happen here at work can be done on your own time with your own resources. If you're really serious about getting ahead and wanting to be able to fulfill your why, there has to be some kind of skin in the game and investment on your part. Or the question is, are you really serious? Are you really committed to that? Or only if I fund the plan, articulate the plan, and do it for you? We need to have the partnership in developing the plan. And a big part of that partnership is somebody really gauging about how far, how fast do I want to go? What am I willing to do in order to, you know, achieve my goals both at work and also in the future? One of the sections I like about the report is the summary on the bottom right-hand corner, where it talks about, let's roll up the total time that we're committing to, both on your personal time, on company time, and the same thing for financial resources. What's my part? What's your part? It really helps to, once we have this, is do this kind of reality testing. Is it doable? Do you really have the kind of hours on your personal time to do those things? And if there is a financial commitment on your part that you're going to do, let's talk about that. If you're a caring leader, getting into the conversation, hey, what resources do you have to do that? Let's brainstorm about that. Maybe there's some strategies that you can come up with after you roll up either the hours or the dollars, and saying, hey, that might not be achievable for somebody, is to go back and rework your list of development opportunities to ones that are maybe self-study, maybe not sitting in a classroom where the dollars are maybe not as intensive for the commitment. So the summary does a real good job of being able to do some reality testing. Okay. There's one other area too that you'll see on, row 23. It says associations, affiliations, organizations. A lot of times who we need to become is just being around other people. And these affiliations are really good to categorize. It's my experience that a lot of times employees don't know what's available to them. What are the resources that they can go to? What are the learning opportunities? And so I think when we're talking about development, having those called out as additional resources is a good conversation to have. If you're ready, let's move on to chapter 3, which is called Learning Through Research, Reading, Podcasts, Videos, and Field Interviews. If you remember on the individual development plan or the personal development plan on tab 2A, there's a section there talked about just kind of your own self-directed learning. This is a deeper dive on describing what that is. And so in your workbook, we would be on tab 3A if you want to see an exemplar of one that's filled out. Actually, this is one that is for me. So It's pretty common that there's categories of information I know I just need to continue to be able to learn. It could be on psychology, it can be on time management, it can be on, well, technology. And so this describes the different outlets and strategies for learning about these kind of categories. And it's from books to professional journalism publications to videos and podcasts that are out there. There is such a great amount of information that's out there, but beginning to get a strategy about how you're going to do your continuous learning using these resources, I found just really helpful to put it down. It's very common that you could be attending a conference, you're in a conversation with a mentor or friend, and they'll say, hey, you've got to read this book. So capturing what you're going to read and how you're going to learn from the experience of others through research papers, blogs, podcasts, is just how I inventory that. And as you can see, if you're looking at the learning tab with me, I go ahead and put the author or the title of the book, as well as the different research journals are there. On the right-hand side of the document, I talk about if I've read it or not. I find it very helpful too to have down for myself, what did I think about the learning? Is it a 5-star learning? You know, it's kind of a, you know, must read for myself and others. Many times a must read for me is I should come back and listen to it again and read it again, and or things that I want to share with peers. You know, one of the things I found this document helpful for is not only just strategizing my own learning, but I'm often asked by folks, hey, John, what are you reading these days? You know, what good book is the last good book that you've read? Or what podcast do you listen to? And, you know, rather than tell someone, I can just show them. And then, you know, my ratings on, you know, how valuable I think the investment of time has been against those is helpful. There's a saying that what goes unsaid actually should be said. And I think you'll notice, too, by looking at these learning resources from books all the way down to blogs, there's something that I value about these different learning modalities. Books tend to be researched, take a lot of time by authors. Sometimes there's co-authors involved in it to put out a pretty significant piece of work on a topic. So by its very nature, because the work and the research has gone into it, it is not as timely as what's happening right now today. And by contrast, if you go to the bottom of the page, when we look at videos and podcasts on certain topics, this is where I find I get more cutting edge, more emerging thought, where there's not a body of work that has been decided, that there's deep research on, but it's almost kind of a qualitative kind of research about what's cutting edge and what's happening, versus all the way up to the top, which is very researched, very academic many times, more in-depth conversations, more mature studies of thought. So I really like to be able to take in my learning, which is breaking cutting edge to research-based work, like in professional journals, all the way up to authors who are going really deep and thoughtfully into topics. So I know it's pretty apparent just by looking at that, but it is how I think about the difference of some of this information. And if I feel like in my working world, if something is coming at me really fast that I need to learn, for example, like a discussion on 5G, I'll actually go to podcast, technology podcast, and I'm searching and looking for conversations on emerging thoughts, let's say on 5G technology, and I'm able to find that generally in podcast and video. So just a little more nuance about how I think about these learning opportunities and how you might benefit from them too. If you're ready, let's go on to chapter 4, the title, A Partnering Mindset, Going Farther Together. We've all heard the old African proverb, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. And that's really at the heart of what this discipline is about, or this approach is about. So remember, we started with the foundation of talking about our goals and objectives and thinking about who we need to become and who we need to learn. But many times, you just can't do it by yourself. And it's through partnerships that you're going to actually achieve your goals and objectives. And giving some thought before you even get going on your mission is what this section is all about. So it's the partnering mindset and trying to think about that up front. By way of example, in my business, we're becoming a technology company, moving from retail banking to a technology company that delivers financial services. I am very dependent, interdependent on my strategic partners at technology companies to do this. And if I think about where I need to spend my time, a significant amount of time is actually building these partnerships, identifying them, ongoing work and commitment to them. But it can't be just in my head that I think about these things. That's good for me to know. There isn't a partnership if there isn't a meeting of the minds about the partnership and describing what it's supposed to be about. So that's what this chapter is about, chapter 4 in the book, in tabs 4A and 4B in the workbook. And so if you're ready, let's go ahead and just turn to the exhibit 4A to talk about how we might want to categorize this. So I'm looking at the form, and it's just very straightforward. It just talks about what's the vision statement for the partnership. And in this example, we talked about, it says, you know, we believe that we're better able to achieve our missions individually and collectively by working together until both of us have accomplished our goals. The other is committed to relentlessly helping the partner accomplish theirs. And so I think it's important at the highest level when you have partnership with folks to describe them in this way, and maybe it can be described more narrowly. But I tell you what it's not. It's not just a contract that describes what the relationship is about with price points and service levels and clawbacks, provisions, and those things. For me, that is a minimum requirement for a partnering mindset, and it certainly isn't a vision of what all we can be and what we can do. But the way to move through that is to have that higher order of vision of what you'd like to do, that commitment to one another, and then actually to talk about what the accountabilities are. And so in this form here, you can see I've given examples of what my accountabilities would be and then what my counterpart accountabilities would be at a technology company. So for example, it talks about, you know, how often will we spend time together and what will we talk about when we do get together? And specifically, what are the sharing points to make sure that we have a meeting of the mind? And so in the example here, you can see it's talking about the roadmaps and an exchanging and a discussion about where are you going, you know, strategically versus where I'm going. Because we may not be going in the same direction, or we may find that there's great synergies in our roadmaps. So you can see by having a future focus and talking about where we're going, how different that is than a contract. So this is one of the dimensions of that partnering mindset. So for me, it's my counterpart at another company. And so for you, when you're filling this out in your partnerships, is specifically identify not just the firm, but the person, and that you have a meeting of the minds of the person about the accountabilities for each of you. The other thing I'd like to do is just to name other folks that are going to be key to us having a thriving relationship. And so on the form here on box number 6, you can see others. It talks about potentially, you know, account executives and maybe the technology officers of both companies need to get together and describing in as much detail as you can what needs to be done, when it needs to be done, by whom it needs to be done. So again, you see this smart thread coming through all aspects of the G&O workbook, particularly when we're talking about partnerships. The last thing I find helpful are the bottom two boxes at the bottom of the form called the partner's profile. Understanding a little bit about, you know, their history, where they came from, also just contemporaneous notes. But hey, the last time we were together, I find it really helpful to harvest the notes from my journal. Most of you know that I'm a big advocate of journaling. I capture agreements, notes, ideas that were important to my business partner. And by recording them in one place, when I get back together, I can real quickly go to my playbook about what's our commitments to one another. I can tell you I've had some success with business partners in doing this. Some have been exceptional at doing this. And no surprise, the partnerships that are the most productive are ones where we actually kind of have a formal agreement and process about what is it that when we get together we're trying to do and what are our accountabilities to one another. So a short discussion, but a really powerful lever as a leader and being an effective executive and getting your mission done is more and more it's through partnerships that are outside the organization. Some people call it ecosystems. I call it constellations of partnerships and relationships that actually make the mission happen. If you're ready, let's move on to Chapter 5. Chapter 5 is time management, described as cave time. I'll describe more about what that means. Meetings, administrative work, and learning. My hero, as many of you know, is Peter Drucker. I went to the Claremont Business School, named after Peter Drucker, Drucker's graduate school of business. And he was famous for saying, time is the scarcest resource, and unless it can be managed, nothing else can be managed. And I so heartily agree with the statement, and agree with the statement based on just the experience of trying to manage time, our scarcest resource. So if you're ready, this is Chapter 5 in the monograph. It is tabs 5A and 5B in your playbook. If you're ready, let's go ahead and take a look at tab 5A. Here's an example of how you might want to fill out a time management piece. And there are certain categories here that we want to look at. So starting in the upper left-hand corner, name. Go ahead and put our role down. This is a good orientation for others that you may want to share this with. And as you make your way down the category of where we spend our time, certainly management meetings, committee meetings for any executive are a big category. And so what you see here is an example of recording what those might be. I think it's real important when you are recording not only what these meetings are, but the amount of time that it takes to participate in them, is to include the estimated time for each of these meetings where you have prep work or typical action items requiring follow-up after the meeting. So this is all in the amount of time that it takes to participate in these meetings. And then you can just see working from left to right, go ahead and list what the meetings are, the time allocated to it, the frequency, to roll up to an annual commitment of time. So in this example here, under management meetings, committee meetings, you see 204 is the amount of hours that are estimated all in for preparation and such. Hey, just a footnote about meetings. There is a good book that's recommended in our reading list at the end of this monograph called Time, Talent, Energy, written by several Bain partners. They actually go into some very specific things that you can do to assess how effective meetings are rather than just recording the time that are in meetings. And I found this is really helpful to have read that book and come back and challenge my meetings on frequency, duration of meeting, our preparation, or how meetings are actually facilitated. And I've actually been able to find some hours and carve some time back while still being very effective. Moving on, as an executive, you know that we have time for administrative activities around people. We have performance appraisals, succession planning, other work that's done. So let's go ahead and record those so that our commitment to those activities are front-loaded when we're starting to build our calendar and schedule. And then time allocated to projects. So almost all of us as executives are involved as project leaders or to be a decision maker in a meeting or to be in a meeting to give inputs. And so the estimate here is to record time. Also, you know, we've gone to great time and effort to put together learning plans and to articulate what those are. That time should be recorded here too. This is a good place to record that. And finally, relationships. We talked about our partnerships and how we are dedicating time and commitment to fostering and building stronger partnerships, that meeting of the minds with our partners. And so we want to record that time here. And finally, at the bottom of the form is a summary of the total hours committed to your playbook activities versus the hours that are available to work, coming with some kind of summary of the percentage of time left for you to do other activities. This is real important, and I can't stress this enough. As I have my leaders do this, and I do this process check for myself too, if I am over 50% allocated in meetings and these activities of learning and meeting with business partners, and I don't have 50% of my time or something like that available for spontaneous discussions with staff to stay with a thorny issue if we need to go meet with some of our board of directors or other folks. These are all opportunities that you end up saying no to, and these are the key opportunities to drive your mission forward. So I encourage you, if you do your allocation of time and it's something over 50% allocated to activities and you have no free time for discovery and serendipity and saying yes to opportunities to help others drive the mission forward, or partnerships, you know, being creatively worked on, or just your own, what I call cave time, to sit and think and review how the mission is going, and to one, confirm that, you know what, we're doing everything possible to drive the mission forward, or you know what, no, I need to do some time, some quiet thinking, this is why I call it cave time, to think about, I need to pivot, I need to change, I need to do something more quantum activity in order to get different results. So that's my footnote on time. Please keep 50% of your calendar open to saying yes to opportunity. Okay, I think we're ready for the conclusion. This is putting it all together. So first of all, thank you for buying the monograph, but really congratulations to you for downloading your template playbook, to listening to these audio instructions, and I encourage you to complete a really rewarding experience to think about articulating and putting into writing into your playbook what it is you're going to do, what are the major goals and objectives you want to accomplish, to think deeply about who you're going to become, what you need to learn, with whom and what partnerships do you need to foster in order to drive your mission forward. I guarantee you, if you do the work up front using the SMART framework or our project templates or the different tools that are here about how to put time against those things and troubleshoot for that, that kind of pre-work before the mission get going is what effective executives do. I also think there's some other benefits that are worth mentioning here. We talk about succession planning, and I can't think of a better gift to give a successor than your playbook. For example, as CEO, as I'm moving on, to be able to share with somebody my goals and objectives, how I am held accountable to the organization for the mission, about how I divvied up my time to the different activities, to where I was going and what I was thinking and learning about, what better starting point for a successor to have. I think there's another dimension about playbooks that is worth mentioning here, in that in today's workforce, it is said that people who are getting started now may hold 12 to 15 different jobs in their lifetime. This is according to the Bureau of Labor and Statistics. So think about that. Your better future may be in the hands of 15 different employers who may or may not have a personal development plan for you, who talks about time and managing time in order to be more effective as an executive. I think this is something, whether or not your company has playbooks or not, that you do for yourself, that is portable, that you take with you, that this is a skill that if you really want to help other executives who are reporting to you find success with you and then beyond you as they continue their professional journeys, I can't think of a more important gift to give somebody than this set of practices and disciplines. I guess my final note too is I'm really encouraged that, isn't it great that in a time when things are changing so much that there is solid foundations that you can use that are timeless, that'll actually help you navigate the future by having these kinds of disciplines, this bedrock in place. And I think that's just real important. I think too that it won't be long before these disciplines and practices are going to be put into some amazing technologies that'll make this process easier, more intuitive, more real-time and updated. And I really look forward to that. But what won't change is the timeless need to really think about what is it that I'm trying to do? Who do I need to become? How am I going to allocate my time against that? And so those are my closing thoughts and ideas. I hope you really enjoy getting to work. There's great satisfaction to be found in thinking about and planning your better future. And so I'll just say goodbye for now. And I'm thinking and holding good thoughts for your success. Thank you.